All right, Joe, we are back on the podcast where we are training men in spiritual fitness. And we are doing that through an 8-week challenge right now where we're looking at and surrounding ourselves with the life of Hudson Taylor. We're calling it the Hero Challenge. And guys are spending 8 weeks dedicating themselves to prayer every morning, dedicating themselves to reading about the life of a Christian hero, Hudson Taylor, but also dedicating themselves to memorizing 8 promises of God and finding a group of friends to do this with. And as we're about halfway through this challenge now, Joe, I don't know about you, but I'm like, the further and further we get into the life of Hudson Taylor, I feel like, man, my life would be a lot more difficult if I didn't actually read the life of Hudson Taylor. Like, I feel like a lot of times I feel like, man, my life is so hard. I got so many difficult things going on in my life. And then I read these stories that Hudson Taylor is facing. I'm like, man, Evan, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Your life is not that hard. Please tell me I'm not alone in this. Do you also read some of these stories and are just shocked at what he's going through and maybe feel a sense of guilt for being like, oh, but my life's so hard?
Yeah, he just kind of pulls the rug of self-pity from my feet. It's like, you know, whatever I'm feeling, whatever the problem is. And it's not just that his problems are greater, because they actually are. He's going through worse things than I am. Yeah. But he actually has such, you know, a better attitude toward it all. Than I do. It's like on both fronts, I'm the, you know, just not looking good as I read this.
Yeah. One of the challenges we've given guys through this is just imagining that Hudson Taylor was one of your guys, one of your friends, you know, in your core group of friends. What would it do to your life if Hudson Taylor was one of those men? And because they say, you know, you are the sum of your 5 closest friends. So what if Hudson Taylor was one of those guys? And I don't know, as I'm reading some of about Hudson Taylor, I know that I want Hudson as one of my friends. Like I want him close to me to so that I can become more like, you know, him. And, but I'm wondering now at this point if Hudson Taylor would want me as a friend. Honestly, that's one of the reflections I'm having as I'm reading this stuff. Because man, there were a couple of times in the 3 chapters guys are going to read this week. There were a few times in particular where I'm yelling at Hudson, like, stop. Like, dude, just turn around, man. Turn around, go the other way. What are you thinking? Like, it's okay. Just go ahead and give up, man. Just go ahead and turn around. I'm seeing in myself how good of a friend I really am and how encouraging I really am. Because there are times I'm like, thank goodness I wasn't alongside Hudson Taylor, because I think I would have been more of a discouragement to him. And that's, you know, it kind of gets us to part of what I want to talk about today is, we see at this point in the life of Hudson Taylor, he spent all his time training, all his time preparing to go to China. He finally gets there, right? He finally gets there. And what we see is just, man, perhaps a lot of disappointment, discouragement, danger, like immediate danger. And then we get to see his reaction to that. But it had me kind of just thinking big picture for guys. What do we do with adversity? What do we do when we face danger as men? What do we do when we just face discouragement? Because that's exactly what Hudson Taylor is walking into. And it hopefully makes us self-reflect. How do you instruct guys to face adversity that's ahead of them?
I think it's something to really pay attention to. I mean, if you can just imaginatively go to that place where you're a young man. I mean, you've been dreaming about China. You've been reading books about China, just not having any clue how you're going to get there. And finally, you're arriving. And I mean, you just think this would be a moment of great exhilaration and satisfaction. But actually, as you're paying attention to his life, you realize just the wave of unexpected kind of disappointment and the kind of emotional upheaval that he would have gone through. I mean, I wrote a list of some of the difficulties he encounters as he lands in China and tries to begin a life there. One, there's this thing, the Taiping Rebellion. There's basically kind of a civil war going on. So literally bullets are flying, people are dying in the streets. And that's the kind of political situation. Second, he's given 3 letters of introduction. So he's got 3 contacts on the ground. One guy's dead. A second guy's gone back to the United States. And the third guy, he's never met before and really doesn't know. So he doesn't have any real kind of relational basis to begin ministry. Third, he doesn't have enough money. Like, the people who are backing him aren't giving him what he needs just to even, you know, have a decent place to live. Fourth, he doesn't look like a respectable missionary. He's not sent by a big denomination. He doesn't have a you know, a doctor before his name. He's just a young, ordinary guy. And just the fifth thing, he's alone. I mean, he's got this intense loneliness, and this, you know, you think of a new country, how different cultures were back then, everything foreign. It's hard to imagine the kind of emotional distress that a guy would be under, you know, given those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we look at, okay, what he does with it, which is the shocking part, right? Because here we are, we all probably aren't going to face that level of disappointment or discouragement or danger. Maybe we will. I mean, who knows? But we will at some point. I think every guy can identify with that. You prepare years or months even for something exciting that you're looking forward to. And then you show up the day of, and then you face disappointment. You face, you know, discouragement. And yeah, you just listed up a long list of difficult things for Hudson Taylor. But I think for a lot of us, it is that question that maybe we have inside of ourselves of fear, even moving forward towards that day of landing on the shores, because we don't know if we're quite ready for the possible disappointment that may come, the possible discouragement that may come, the possible danger that's ahead. So give us, let's highlight for guys, what did Hudson Taylor do? What did our friend Hudson Taylor, how would he, the story he's telling us of how he handled this?
Yeah, guys, be ready for some conviction. So think, how would you handle those kind of circumstances? What would your attitude, what would your frustration toward God be? What's incredible is in the book we're reading, I mean, he has this, you know, he reflects back on this experience, and this is Hudson Taylor's comments. He says, the cold and even the hunger, the watchings and sleeplessness of nights in danger, and the feeling at times of utter isolation and helplessness were well and wisely chosen and tenderly and lovingly meted out. What circumstances could have rendered the word of God more sweet, the presence of God more real, the help of God more precious? In other words, he believed that this was God's loving and wise plan. And this was actually the opportunity for all of the things that he'd studied to become real in his life. I mean, that I'd love to say that that's how I go into the unexpected crisis and how I reflect back. It's not right now, but my hope is that even through this challenge, I'm becoming a little bit more in my attitudes like Hudson Taylor.
Yeah, I see so much in this, like, trust is a cheat code, man. That's what I'm seeing in the life of Hudson Taylor. Like the faith he has in God, the trust he has, it's a cheat code that propels him through all of this danger, propels him through all of the discouragement and difficulty. And you can see him leaning back in these times of danger and difficulty on the trust that he hasn't got. Yeah, what time could be more sweet with God as he faces all this? It's like, man, but it is that cheat code of that trust in God that's moving him forward. And we see, I think it's interesting, one of the things you notice about a guy like Hudson Taylor as he faces time and time again discouragement and difficulty, because he, even in the next chapter, he gets bloodied up, right? He's getting beat up and everything. But what is the pattern that we begin to see in the life of Hudson Taylor? You see danger, you just see discouragement. And when he faces that, what comes out of him? This is another convicting thought. It's constantly scripture, the promises of God, he explicitly says, and hymns. He's quoting hymns. Like, what? that's what's coming out of this guy as he's facing these things. How do we begin to become those kind of guys?
I mean, you can just see, I mean, he stored in his heart, you know, the truth that he needed for those critical moments in his life. And I mean, you just mentioned that story where they're headed in. It's his first kind of interior mission trip with a friend. Everybody, it's a kind of funny moment because everybody's telling him not to go. I mean, even like the it's not a taxi driver, but the guy with the wheelbarrow says, look, I'm turning back. I mean, they're headed right into danger when finally they get grabbed by some, some soldiers. And like you said, they're getting beaten up. They're quoting hymns to each other. But the fact that they even know hymns they can quote, that's what's remarkable. Yeah. And so so I think that's a call for us. I mean, this is why meditating on gospel truth, memorizing scripture, hymn workouts, all the things that we talk about, the cross training. Guys, this is for those moments when you're in the trenches, whatever those trenches might look like in your particular, life.
Yeah. If the question is, how do guys begin to prepare for adversity? How do guys begin to prepare for disappointment and discouragement? It's be prepared for it is the ultimate answer. Like, you have to be prepared. By a lot of it is, we talk a lot about the fundamentals, like know and have the habits of those fundamentals of godliness built in. You know, look, there's never a bad time to pray. It's not like there's bad, but the best time to build a prayer habit is before you go into a war-torn country, right? The best time to have the promises of God written on your heart is before you go into that place where it's like, man, I may be discouraged or disappointed. So nailing the fundamentals now, wherever guys are at, are huge, because that's what you're going to lean back on. That's what you're going to default to in those times when you're getting bloodied and bruised, whatever, you know, the disappointment may look like, and the danger may look like in your situation. So yeah, guys, just seeing that now, like, hey, it's kind of weird maybe for you to say, oh, let's meditate on a hymn, memorize a hymn, let's memorize scripture. It's difficult. What's more difficult than that is facing hard situations in life and not having that to lean back on, not having that trust as a cheat code, you know, to propel you forward. All right. So I want to fast forward to the next chapter, because there's a shout out for Scotland in here, Joe. All right. All my Scottish friends, y'all get a shout out here. I was not expecting, but he mentions a guy, William Burns, and he mentions Scotland here. Give me some backstory here, because I have no idea who this is.
Okay, so one of his close friends, I mean, this is one of the guys who he walks most close with in his whole kind of ministry in China, but at least for a season, it's a guy named William Burns. And guys need to know that William Burns is really every bit as remarkable as Hudson Taylor. Mm-hmm. A little bit of his backstory. So he was Scottish. When he was in his early 20s, he graduated from seminary. And there's a pretty famous pastor named Robert Murray McShane. And McShane was headed off to do a mission in Israel. And so this young preacher, this guy, William Burns, is going to go take Robert Murray McShane's church in Dundee. So he's kind of preaching in Dundee. And then he goes and he takes a service at another place called Kilsyth. And something just begins to happen. And 1,400 people all of a sudden show up on a rainy day because they want to go to church. And then that night, 4,000 show up because they want to go to church.
Oh.
Revival breaks out in this place that William Burns is preaching. He goes back to Dundee. Revival breaks out there. They've got a communion service with like 15,000 people. This guy is a guy who saw revival in Scotland. He then is a missionary over in Canada, preaching in multiple languages in different parts of the Wild West out that direction. And then he feels called and he goes to China. And so you got to realize, so, you know, here's a guy a little bit more mature who's had incredible experiences with God, becoming Hudson Taylor's friend. Hmm. And so we're talking about needing friends like Hudson Taylor. We got to realize Hudson Taylor didn't grow up all by himself. He had guys like William Burns. And just to give you a little flavor of William Burns, I found a great quote from him. This is the kind of man that he was. This was kind of his motto for life. He said, if a man has Christ in his heart, heaven before his eyes, and only as much temporal blessing as is just needed to carry him safely through life, then pain and sorrow have little to shoot at. Mm. So if you're just clinging to Jesus, if you're not clinging to material comfort, you don't have a whole lot to lose. Mm. And so this is the kind of guy that steps into Hudson Taylor's life. And talk about iron sharpening iron. These are two guys that can really begin to minister to each other as they minister to the people in China.
Hearing that story reminds me of, you know, one of the things I tell guys often is you never know if the next guy you meet will turn out to be your next best friend. Like you'd be surprised at, you know, friendships that come along the way, and that friendships will come if you will begin to pursue relationships. But part of that is just, you know, I tell guys, man, really double down on living and pursuing godliness. And if you pursue hardcore going in the way of godliness, those you will be surprised by the friendships that come along the way. And that's some of what we see in Hudson Taylor's life. Like, Hudson did not meet William Burns before he went to China and faced all these difficulties. You know, it's one thing, we're all waiting for that next best special spiritual friend who's going to encourage us and motivate us so that then we can begin whatever. But that's never the way it works. It's like, no, you just go. You just go hardcore in the way of godliness. And along the way, you're going to meet other guys that are going hardcore in the way of godliness. And you begin to encourage one another, and you begin to strengthen one another. You begin to have impacts towards one another in ways you never would have expected. I mean, Hudson says of William Burns, like, it was his passion for layman evangelism that just really lit him up and just really just set him out on this path. So I think the same is true for all of us guys. Like, okay, pursue hardcore, go, don't wait on that friend. Don't wait on the William Burns to show up and then go on mission. Like, get going, and you'll be surprised at the guys you meet along the way. You know, we say, like, spiritual friendships are really an accelerant to the fire of following in godliness. And so I think it's one of those things where we've got to evaluate, man, who are those guys around me that are just adding accelerant? Maybe even I would encourage guys to maybe take some time this week in their group of friends to tell some of those stories. Like, who are some of those William Burns in your life that you've met along the way that have propelled you forward? And because those are fun stories to tell. Those are inspiring stories to tell. We need to hear that to encourage us to not stay isolated in this, following God and going on our particular mission.
Yeah. Yeah. If Hudson Taylor needed friends, you know, we need friends too. And so make that, this has to be part of our challenge, is to actually not live in isolation and to have these kinds of relationships.
Yeah. All right. I got a question for you. Cause in the last chapter that guys are going to read this week, they come in contact with, what I think Hudson Taylor is probably most famous for, I hate to say most famous for, but especially if you read children's books about Hudson Taylor that have drawings and such, and even every biography I've read about him, everybody makes a big deal about the way Hudson Taylor dressed when he was in China, because he dressed like the locals. He dressed weird. He looked. Some of me says, "Wow, that's cool. That's unique. That's different." I'll be honest. Another part of me is like, so what? Like, so he dressed a little weird. He wore a different t-shirt and was on mission. Help me understand exactly what's going on there. Did you see the same thing? Is him dressing differently a big deal for the ordinary Christian man?
You know, I think it's a real model of not letting our sense of pride be a hindrance to our effectiveness for the kingdom. I think you got to think back. So this is, 1800s. And this is a kind of an Englishman. I mean, they're known, you know, for a stiff upper lip. They're known, you know, for a kind of, you know, keeping their bearing, looking a particular way, respectability, all these kinds of things. And this is not, it's important for guys to realize, this is not Hudson Taylor just decide he's going to wear a different style of jeans or put on a different kind of t-shirt. This is him stepping out and honestly letting go of every sense of just pride and every sense of what he thinks is proper. I found a great segment where he wrote a letter to his sister and described, you know, what went into this transformation. And, you know, it started with, he talks about like his hair getting cut and then gets dyed black. He talks about putting on these Chinese socks that aren't elastic like the English ones. And so they don't really fit your feet. Then he starts talking about the breeches. These are like the trousers or the pants. And, you know, his are 2 feet too wide around his waist. They've got these short legs. They're being tucked into these long white socks that make him look like he's wearing what he calls bloomers. There's no shirt that's worn. He's got this white jacket, sleeves as wide as ladies wore, he says, 20 years before. Doesn't look like it's in style. I mean, you can just imagine, as he steps out into like public space, he feels like an idiot. You know, he does not feel like a man at that moment. This is not how men dress. And this is not how English missionaries dress. And so, I mean, this is him just letting go of that sense of dignity that's unhelpful so that he can, like Jesus, you know, incarnate love. And I think as guys, I don't know what, it's not going to look like probably changing our wardrobe. We all have that sense of pride, what, you know, what kind of keeps us, you know, in ourselves. We're not willing to step out and be vulnerable to really love people. I mean, this is a guy, for the sake of the gospel, to communicate the love of Christ, he wasn't going to let anything, you know, keep him from being more effective with sharing the gospel. And so we got to learn from that.
Yeah, it does make me think of the the question of what are you willing to do for the things that you are discontent for? So some of this made me think back to the Apostle Paul, and just I love reading of the Apostle Paul's contentment. He's a real inspiration, you know, obviously telling us to be content in any and every situation. But then there's this piece of Paul that is super discontent, and it's that he is very discontent with the lost people around him. He can't stand the thought of lost people being around him. And so he kind of goes to extremes to fight back that one piece of his life where he's discontent. And I guess I see that in Hudson Taylor. Like, gosh, he's broke. He's got no friends when he shows up. It's war torn, but he's super content. Like he's got this inner peace contentment, but there is this one side of him where he's like, he is discontent with the thought of there being people on the inside of China that have never heard the gospel. And he's so discontent with it that, yeah, he'll dress weird. He'll be crazy. He'll look like an idiot. He'll do whatever. And I think that that's got to be a propelling force for us at some point.
Yeah. It reminds me, Spurgeon's got a great book, and it's, I'm going to get the title wrong, but it's to the effect of kind of the eccentric leader. And he goes back to the meaning of eccentric, meaning on the outside of the center. Mm. And what he basically does is go through all the effective people, Christian ministers through the ages, and how none of them were normal. None of them fit in. All of them looked weird and looked foolish in their age, but that's what made them effective. Yeah. And I think, you know, we all have to be eccentric. Like, you know, if we just fit in our normal guys, that's not a recipe that leads to, you know, much effective work for the kingdom. Hmm. And so, you know, let's think about those ways. How do we think outside the box? How do we break the mold? What are the small things that we could do that really enable us to reach out and love in a radical way that, you know, catches the notice of people around us? Jesus, I mean, that's what he did. That's what, you know, Paul did, like you said, that's what Hudson Taylor did. How do we do it as well?
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I hope you will go this week, read these chapters, discuss it with your friends, kind of take some of what we've talked about. These are, again, we want to try to act like a tour guide through the book of this autobiography of Hudson Taylor and tell you, man, you got to see these things. And definitely, if you see nothing else in the chapters this week, see that pattern that is developing, that's already there in Hudson Taylor's life, where, yes, he faces disappointment. Yes, he faces discouragement. Yes, he faces danger, and it's going to continue to come. But he's always leaning back on the promises of God. He's always leaning back on things like hymns that are deep within him. So you cannot do this challenge without actually memorizing and meditating on those promises of God that we're giving you, because we feel like that is what's setting you up to be the kind of guy you want to be, whatever it is that your future faces. And I will, man, shameless plug. Let me see if I've got a copy. Oh, I do right here. And Hymn Workouts, all right? This is Joe's book, Hymn Workouts. If you want to be the kind of guy who actually knows hymns and maybe even memorizes a hymn, we've got a book of 100 different hymns that you can meditate on, and that will provide that fruitfulness that you want in a time of danger, discouragement, and difficulty. So check that out. But you guys, get together this week. Have a good time talking about your friend Hudson Taylor. See what he does in your life. And y'all join us next week on the Cross Training Ministries podcast.